From the Yankees' perspective here, you know, there's just so many things about the way it's run. You know, I don't know how else to say it. That's just a broad term for basically saying a lot of the things about the Yankees bother me, the way the Yankees are run, rather than just running through the seven things here, or eight. But the one thing that really jumps out to me, and this kind of ties into Spencer Jones's day yesterday. Spencer Jones, as you obviously know by now, hit three home runs in his first three at-bats. And it happened when I was on the air, and I was just kind of thumbing through social media, and I saw it. I'm like, wow. Now, I was keenly aware of how well he was playing before yesterday. It's not like he was hitting 209 and looked a little overmatched since he made the jump to AAA. He was absolutely crushing it, you know, hitting about 350, had a ton of home runs, very few games, massive OPS, blah, blah, blah. Strikeouts not nearly as pronounced as they were in the lower levels of the minors. And I'm sitting here saying, I'm like, all right, this to me is one of the, this might be the biggest thing that's wrong with the Yankees. So, and I would not send Volpe down. Many of you said that you would. All right, we could agree to disagree. That's fine. But there's been no repercussion for Volpe's erratic play. Still plays every night. Now you want to tell me, well, they dropped him to the ninth spot. That to me, that's not necessarily enough. All right, I'm not going to send him down, but I would sit him a game or two. All right, I've said that. Dominguez, shoddy playing left field. It's gotten worse again. Like, the spring training was a disaster. Then it was fairly quiet when the season started. Then there was a little teeny flare-up, and then it went away. And now the flare-up is back. He does not look comfortable out there. And for the most part, he still plays left field, right? And all the other myriad issues that bother us with the Yankees, whether it's the lineups or just base running that's sloppy, vivas, and there's never a repercussion. And I've used the word accountability. Now, for a while with these, where is the accountability? Well, the flip side of that is, where is the reward? Where's the reward? Aren't you incentivizing young players? And again, Spencer Jones is young, but he's not 19 or 20 years old like Lombard. He's 24. So to me, you know, the best organizations, there's a healthy balance of, I don't mean if you go 0 for 4 and you take the collar and you strike out, or you hit into a ground ball double play, but I mean like when there's just things that aren't checked, you know, running the bases with intelligence, you know, being buttoned up on the bases, being buttoned up in the outfield, and that's kind of like, eh, hit or miss, or not really a staple of the team, we got a big problem. And that's why the Yankees have problems that they need to resolve before the deadline next week, Thursday at 6. Now, the other thing, too, is I'm sitting there saying, if I'm a young player and I'm crushing it at AA, which he did at Somerset, all right, I justify the call up to AAA. Well, then now I have had the best AAA run in the history of the Yankees minor leagues. That's true. Nobody's put up the numbers in AAA in that small sample like Spencer. I don't know if he's going to be... Kevin Sal says Spencer Jones Moss. By the way, I would take 22 home runs the rest of the way. You know, that little infusion of power that Moss gave us back in the day. I'm not sitting here saying he's going to be a quicker Paul O'Neill or the lefty Aaron Judge. Who the hell knows? But what I know is he deserves the recognition and the honor of being on a major league field based on the merit of his play. And they're probably not going to do it. So all of these things with the Yankees also leads me to this. All right, we can yell, what's the solution? Here's my solution. Trade Grisham, put Dominguez in center, call up Spencer Jones, get McMahon at third base. I know he could catch the ball. I know he's hitting 2-0 whatever. I know there's, you know, the altitude in Colorado. I don't know, but I just think if you put Ryan McMahon in a pennant race and he's got some good players around them and that short porch, and he's inspired, and you know, with, you know, whether it's Fried or whether it's Stroman throwing a lot of ground balls, and even Will Warren, though he gets strikeouts, he gets a lot of grounders as well. To me, you got to get a guy who can catch it. So there's moves to be made, so I would still sell as an element of that. And the third baseman, I do not want Suarez. There was a point where I'm like, yeah, I'll take anybody. No, I think that that's the wrong move. I will not take anybody. I will not take somebody who strikes out 30-something percent of the time and is a train wreck defensively at third base. Not doing it. So those are the baseball issues today. That's where we're at. Hopefully the Yankees can get it going. Hopefully the Mets could keep it going. Let's get back to you guys here. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal inside of our Town Fair Tire studio. Friends of Town Fair remind you that you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Let me get Kevin in Baldwinsville. And he is on the fan. What up, Kev?
Hey, BT. Big fan. Yeah, I'm over by Syracuse.
Oh, you're all the way up there. So gotcha.
I wanted to throw a couple things out. What were you thinking about Acuna for Grisham? I feel like that kid that stopped the Mets outfield. Huge Mets fan, by the way.
Okay.
That's got the Mets outfield that kind of gives the Yankees some depth, whether you're sending down to your shortstop or you're using them at third base. I also wanted to ask you about, I don't think the Mets need Cease. I know that sounds a bit absurd, but I'm thinking bring up Sprout, Tong, and McLean and give everybody four innings, whether it's out of the rotation, whether it's out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of those three innings, 75 pitches, and then getting rocked by random bullpen guys.
Well, it's really hurt the team. I mean, the disparity between the starters' innings, and it's going to get better with Manaea, and I'd have to think that Senga the other day was a bit of an aberration for Senga. Peterson's been an all-star. He's good. I love him. I've loved him for a couple years now. But the gap between what the starters provide innings-wise and what the relief pitchers provide innings-wise is untenable. It is not going to work. So would they get unconventional? First of all, they're not calling up all three of those guys. You know, maybe Sprout gets a little, maybe one of them, maybe two, maybe you bring one. If like, listen, if you don't, let's just take Sprout. Say they bring him up and they don't want to mess around and change his role and make him a relief pitcher, which I can understand. You know, young, he's in the flow of being a starter. Okay, makes sense. Well, you could always put Clay Holmes back in the bullpen, which would now address a need in the bullpen. And obviously, you make one more trade. The first point about the Grisham Acuna thing, first of all, you know, I know the Yanks and the Mets have made a few trades over the years. I think like Neil Allen was one, maybe even Rafael Santana. Like, I don't know. Dolph, do me a favor. Just pop up if you can. Yankee Met trades. All right. I feel like Neil Allen was one, and I feel like Rafi was one, but you're not doing it now. I think it's a different. It's a different energy. The Soto stuff, it's just a little different. Now, if they ever did, let me suspend the reality of what I think they'll do. But Grisham and Acuna, I mean, from a Yankee perspective, I'll do that in a minute. Acuna's young. He's explosive. You know, he's got some upside. And he's not perfect, but he's young. And he's making peanuts, whereas Grisham is making $5 billion, but his contract is up. I don't know that the Yankees re-sign him. Now, if the Yankees re-sign him and he's here for three, 4 more years and a valuable player, well, then that's maybe a little different. But, yeah, the Grisham would make the Mets better, and Acuna could satisfy the Yankees, you know, fortify the prospects or maybe even sticks right now, but it's just not going to happen. Let me get Seth in Scottsdale, Arizona. Seth.
BT, I called in today to follow up on a gift that I sent you. I hope you received.
Which one is that?
So we met at Fanatics Fest about a month ago,
yep.
And I paid some respects. I just kind of gave you some compliments about you personally and so forth. And then I sent the Jets jersey to the fan with the number 52, Betanzel on the back. Did you receive it?
I got it. I got that's the one that says what, BT and Sal on the back?
Yeah, or pronounced Betanzel for those that don't know the show.
Yeah. All right, so now here's the thing. To me, I got it. I appreciate it. It's a great gesture. Thank you very much. Number one.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
number
one. I sent you
a new message. Well, how do I wear that? Because it's in the man cave already. It's already there. I got it. But I'm not, like, I would never wear even, first of all, I mean, if the day that you see me walk around with a jersey, forget about and Sal part of it. The day that you see me walking around with a jersey that says BT, just shoot me because I'm officially a loser. Get rid of me. That's number one.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. And
okay.
That's where the joke is, where you put the names all together. And
I know.
Person pronounced it as Betanzel, right? Okay.
Now, if he was Jets fan, I'm still not doing it, but it looks great in the basement. I appreciate that.
That's great to hear. Who knows? So, you know, I sent one to Sean as well. I you know, it got lost in the mail at the office, but fortunately it did arrive to his house, and his was a number 38 for jersey to celebrate his 38th birthday in conjunction with the fan.
Mm-hmm.
and the last name on that one is Lugash.
There you go.
L-U-G. Yep. So you were talking about jerseys earlier today, not wearing the tiki one. So I just that was the reason for the call today. And then I guess while I have you on the phone, I got a 2-for-1 Yankees trade that I guarantee you, you've never been asked. It's probably going to be the hardest decision. So you tell me what you would do.
Go ahead.
St. John's men's basketball BT and Sal show in exchange to the Yankees for the bench coach managerial position with a $1 million sign-up bonus.
All right. See you later, St. John. See you later, Sal. Goodbye. I'm going to the Yankees. The easiest question I've ever been asked there. See ya.
All right, that was great, man. That's what. So would you, in all seriousness, BT, would if Booney called you up and said, "Hey, I want you to be my bench coach," would you take that position and then forego the two loves and passions you have behind the mic?
Set. Aaron Boone is never calling me to ask me to take a job on the Yankees. Now, if the Yankees ever move on from Aaron Boone, and maybe Aaron Boone calls me in 2 or 3 years and he wants to do a podcast, that call could come. I mean, come on. Listen, I don't know when it was. Dove, maybe you remember. Wasn't there a point where Francesa said he can manage the Yankees? Didn't he say that? I mean, Hoff, you just had to step out of the room for a second. Calder said, if Aaron Boone calls me and asks me to be a bench coach for the Yankees, what would I say? Come on. Aaron Boone's not calling me to coach. What are you insane? He might call me to tell me to stop getting thrown out of games. And I'd say, hey, you too. At least I only got thrown out of one game, Booney. You get thrown out of 4 this year, 10 last year, whatever it was. You know? Me, it just happened once. I don't have a problem. Oh, jeez. By the way, there's been a lot of Little League stories. Thankfully, it's kind of moved on for me. Nice to get out of that cycle. What was it? And I only say the young man's name because it was in print. I think the name was Marco Rocco. Did you see that story about the 12-year-old kid? Was it Haddonfield? I'm so happy that this got flipped. Like, I couldn't imagine if this was, forget about my son, but if it was one of my kids that I coach. So we did a bat flip the other night, and it was a pretty aggressive one, and it was in one of the state games. So it's district, sectional, state, and then as a 12-year-old, literally, you know, either the Metro, whatever, and then it's the Little League World Series, right? So they're pretty deep. And he hit a bomb, and he walked it off, and he flipped his bat, and he gets thrown out of the game. Or he gets, the ump says, what was the term? I don't know, a reckless conduct. Gets booted for the next game. They file an injunction, rightly. His dad did the right thing. File an injunction, and they're like, well, we're not going to get the answer until 2 or 3 hours before the game. So I was following this, and thankfully, common sense prevailed. They let the young man play, and I saw that they lost. I think it was 10-0. They got mercy, so I think that that's it for them. But could you imagine a judge, let alone a Little League umpire, but as the second checkpoint, because maybe the umpire, maybe quick trigger, whatever, making it about himself, you know, making him a spectacle, look at me, because that happens. But imagine a judge with time to think about it and reason and law and logic saying, nah, you know what, I'm going to uphold this. Sorry, young man, you can't play. You get one chance. I mean, that would be devastating. So I'm happy the judge did the right thing. I didn't have a dog in a fight in terms of who won. I don't even know those teams, but I'm happy that that worked out. But there's been then some other, hey, get on this guy. He actually did something wrong. He got physical with somebody, which is ridiculous at any level, especially with kids around. But he got into a fight with umpire, coaches, Little League, pushed a kid. I don't know what the hell happened. But there's like 3 stories. One of them was mine this week about like Little League stories, coaches, kids. My God, I mean, I guess that does generate clicks too, right? Dove, did you get that on the trades?
I did.
What do you got?
Neil Allen was not a trade.
He was not a trade, but he did play for both the Yankees.
Correct,
and Mets.
But he played for the White Sox in between the second time, and the Cardinals in between the first time.
Well, the Cardinals—that was the Gary Carr. That was the when Neil Allen went to the Cardinals, that's when Gary Carter in '85, not '86, in '85, Gary Carter's first game as a Met at Shea hit a home run off Neil Allen at St. Louis to win it. And in the left field, I remember that well. All right, so, and Neil Allen was pretty good for the Mets. Had a lot of saves, whatever. So, was not traded Yankee Mets guy. What about Raffy?
Santana was traded by the Mets with Victor Garcia to the Yankees in exchange for Darren Reed.
Okay.
Phil Lombardi and Steve Fry.
Okay, I remember those. So, I was right with Raffy. What about Greg Burke? I remember Burke, a relief pitcher with premature gray hair, who pitched for both the Yankees. Is that all it says, though, the only Yankee Met trade?
Actually, the story I found didn't have Santana. It was wrong.
Oh.
So I'm going individually to see Allen and Santana.
Oh, okay, you don't have to go nuts. I don't need that massive tiki rabbit hole, but good job. So at least it was Raffy. Thank you, Dove. Appreciate it, buddy. Let me get Kyle in Eatontown, New Jersey. Maybe he was there for the bat flip. Kyle, what's going on?
No, not there for the bat flip. How are you guys doing today?
Good, good. What's cooking?
So I run a program down on the Jersey Shore, and you know, just to kind of touch on the bat flips and all the, you know, it's good for the game to an extent, but by no means in that situation can you suspend that player for the next game, especially when you watch the Little League broadcast in Williamsport.
With Todd Frazier.
With Frazier, right?
Yep,
and he's a friend. You have the analysts that are basically getting jacked up when the kids do it.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so it's like it adds excitement to the game, right? I come from the old school where if you did that and it was, you know, excessively, you're wearing one in the rib.
I get it.
So, you know, there's a fine line in it, right? Mm-hmm. If the kid is being a jerk about it, you know, the warning needs to be had. Suspend him for the following game in that big of a game? Absolutely not.
No question. We're coming from the same spot. Same mentalities of the old days and same adjustments to the new days. Yeah, because one of the things that I saw, I think it was the young man's, he's a real estate lawyer, I think I read, Mr. Rocco. I don't know if he listened to the show. I'm just happy it worked out for the family. That would have been horrendous. You don't get that back once. At least one chance. They didn't win, but I think that's why I want to make sure I have this right. But I did see it. I don't know if it was him. But you saw the video of one of the kids in Williamsport. I mean, it was a monstrosity of a bat flip. And Todd Frazier, who's on the booth. I've seen Todd. I know he coaches a really good club team. I've seen him at some of these. He coaches an older team, a year or two older than my son. I've seen him. He's definitely out there involved, and his team's really good. And he's in the booth in Williamsport. And He was celebrating, having fun, not making a big deal of the bat flip. And somebody, maybe even the lawyer for the Rocco family, put that side by side with what young Marco did. By the way, way to blast that ball, Marco. Good swing. And they're like, this is not equitable. So one player hits a home run in a Little League event that leads into Williamsport, and he gets suspended? And one kid hits a home run at Williamsport, and it gets glorified. Where's the consistency? So it was a pretty rare case. So from a legality perspective, I didn't have faith that the Rocco family would win, just because you never know what's going to happen. Because, again, common sense is out the window with so much these days. But I'm sitting there saying, there's no doubt that he should win this injunction. All right, we'll get back to these calls in a second. So I still enjoy the speeches, the MLB speeches for the Hall of Fame. We're getting ready for that this weekend. And did you guys see the video of CC Sabathia, basically? I mean, their car broke down. They're like, hey, anybody want to take us to Cooperstown? I don't know where they were, but I could see one of the mile markers, so they're obviously on a highway. The entire Sabathia clan. So hopefully they got there safely, scooped up. The great CC, really happy for him. Do you know how the story ended there, Dove? Because you're grabbing your mic.
I don't. All I was going to say is my thought when I saw the story was it's like the Yankees on the road to the World Series. Their car breaks down because they're not getting there.
Dove. You're probably right, unfortunately. All right, so you got the class of five. You got Dick Allen, Parker, CC, Ichiro, Wagner. So I never saw Dick Allen play once. His last season was 77. I never saw him take a swing. Dave Parker, I don't remember him as a Pirate. I mean, I know what he did there. I only really remember him as a Red. I remember when the Mets were playing the Reds and from 84 on. That's when I remember him as a big, hulking, intimidating beast as a Red. And everything else was like on This Week in Baseball or, you know, highlights as a Pirate. But and then of course CC, Ichiro, and Wagner, I've seen their entire careers. Now, And I'm happy for Wagner, and he deserves it. And, of course, I'm happy for CeCe, and he deserves it. But I just wanted to focus on Ichiro for a sec. You know, to me, it's Ted Williams, it's Tony Gwynn, the greatest pure hitters of all time, and then it's Ichiro. And, you know, I'm not so sure. I can't prove it, but you also can't disprove the statement. If I were to say that if Ichiro would have come over earlier from Japan, that it wouldn't be Ted Williams, that it wouldn't be Tony Gwynn, that it would be Ichiro. who's considered to be the greatest pure hitter of all time. Ichiro was just ridiculous. And, you know, it's funny, too, because you hear this with Judge. We know this with Aaron Judge. Because Judge went to Fresno State and then the minors, he started his career at the age of 24. Whenever Spencer Jones gets up here and, you know, I can't expect him to be Aaron Judge, but, like, if he does some good things, he, too, is going to be victimized by a late start for his major league career. So Aaron Judge, because he was 24, whether it's, he's going to, you know, knock on wood if he stays healthy, 500 is going to be with his eyes shut. But how much beyond 5 or 550 or 600 does Judge get? I don't know. It's a lot of games that he didn't get to play, not to mention the COVID-shortened season in 2020, not to, where they only played 60, not to, and he didn't play all 60, not to mention earlier injuries where games were robbed. And not next year, but the year after that, there's going to be, I believe, and I've said this for 2 years now, a brutal, protracted lockout and stoppage of baseball. So you're going to be looking at more games that Aaron Judge is not going to have a chance to pad the stats just based on, you know, the time's ticking. And while we talk about Judge in that regard with 24, coming up at 24, Ichiro came up at 27. It's 27. And, you know, to me, like the pureness, one of the reasons why I love Bellinger, and I'm not putting Bellinger anywhere near Ichiro, not even similar players, but what I love about Bellinger is he's got power. You know, he's not going to hit 230. He can run. He's got a great arm. He can field anywhere. And, you know, Ichiro, you know, me and Sal talk about, like, the ball player. Like, hey, this guy's a ball player. I get David Wright, ball player. You just know ball player. You know what the term means. It means there's really no weaknesses. He's a ball player, right? And Ichiro was a ball player. He could have sold out and probably popped 10 more home runs a year and probably chiseled off 15 or 20 points on the batting average. Same with Boggs. Same with Gwynn, I'm sure. Maybe not Carew, because he just had a very, like, soft swing. Carew's swing was different. I think those other guys who are high average hitters could have hit a lot more home runs and sacrificed some numbers there. But think about this. Ichiro, all right, finished with just over, he's got what, 3,089 hits. And, you know, not to inundate you with stats here, but when you look at Ichiro's numbers, I mean, again, coming up at the age of 27, I mean, this guy's busting out years where he's got 240 hits. Every year, 230, 240, just a barrage on the record books. I think the name was George Sisler, if I'm not mistaken, where he broke the one of Sisler's records back in the day. And, you know, Ichiro, 242, 262. I think that was the Sisler mark, I think. 224, 238, 213, 225, 214. That led the league. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven or eight, you know, hit titles. So if he would have come up at the age of, say, 24, like Judge, this is the point, and without going nuts, I'm going to be conservative here, and I'm going to give him 200 hits a year instead of 240, 250, or 260. You just do a little simple math. Suddenly, 3,089 hits becomes automatically, conservatively speaking, 3,689. Now, where does that place? Well, he jumps in front of Stan Musial, who's fourth right now with 3,630. Derek's behind him. And now he's in the neighborhood of Hank Aaron and then obviously Ty Cobb and Pete Rose. I'm of the mindset that if Ichiro would have come over at a conventional age, he would have flew by Pete Rose. And even though Pete Rose has the most hits, you've never heard me say this. I actually push back the other way. Pete Rose, to me, wasn't one of the 10, 15, 20 greatest pure hitters of all time. I think if Ichiro comes over here, you know, like say he was a college kid, or a high school kid, and he plays 2 years in the minors, comes up, he's 22, 23, you know. That's three or four or five more years of ball. He's the all-time hits king. And because the average was so amazing and he never struck out, I believe that there would have been a lot of people, I probably would have been doing it as well because I didn't see Ted Williams carrying the mail for him as the greatest pure hitter of all time. And a rocket from right field and a blur on the bases. So, pretty wild. Bobby's in Connecticut. What's up, Bobby? How are you today, kid?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, BT?
Good, good. Thanks.
Hey, I'm calling maybe to push back a little bit, but I wanted to get your opinion because we've been talking third base all year. My particular opinion is the most important infield position, if you're going to win a ring, is shortstop.
Yep. I agree.
And you said you wouldn't send Volpe down. I'm not giving up on Volpe, but I think the Yankees have to fix him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think fixing him under the New York City spotlight every day in and day out, he's proven that's not working.
Yep.
I think they need to either send him down to Tampa with some coaching, Willie Randolph, whomever,
mm-hmm.
Or to AAA, and you know, let him reset. Might be a good thing. But if you keep him at shortstop, then you're saying we're not going to win this year. And your comment about, hey, let's move Dominguez to center. I've always said that you got to be strong up the middle, and Volpe and Dominguez up the middle to me is saying this is not the year. Which if that's what you're saying, and we're going to waste another year of Judge, you know, then I would tend to disagree with you.
I got you. Well, Bob, let me tell you exactly what I'm saying. Not what I tend to say. What I am saying is this: the way they look now, not happening. So let's do something about this. Jazz is great at second. Volpe was very good at short. And, you know, you're sitting here basically denouncing the skill or the ability of Dominguez to play center. How the hell do you know? That's what he is. You know, when he was that top prospect coming up, wasn't playing left field. Now, of course, switch hitter, pop, six speed, like that elevates his prospect status, of course. But he was not a butcher in center field by any stretch. He's a butcher in left field now. They're not going to do that. I would do it, though. Eddie is in Wausau. BT and Sound on the Fan. What's up, Ed?
Hey, BT.
Hey.
Just a question for you. Have you ever been to the Little League World Series?
As a fan?
Yeah.
No, I watch it every year. I've never been to Williamsport. No, not yet.
Oh, as a coach and as involved as you are with your kids, mm-hmm. take them. Do yourself the favor. It is the best experience. I used to take my kids to Williamsport. They say there's nothing in life that's free. Well, Little League Baseball at Williamsport is free.
I know.
And the talent level is fantastic.
Yep.
You're watching kids play from all over the world.
I know.
It's to the point where, you know, my kids and I have talked about it for now that they're older. You know, my middle son, who actually went to Little League Baseball camp, which is the best value there is out there,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
He called me and said, for Father's Day, I'm telling you the date, we're going to the Little League World Series.
Ah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I watch it all the time. Matter of fact, thanks for the call, Ed. It's like one of the only pure things left in sports, let's be honest here. I mean, what else is pure? You want a new bat, $450, $500. You want a real glove and not something from, you know, generic, you know, sporting goods store, $300, $350, like a real one, you know? Everything's expensive. You want to take lessons, you want to do, like, I get it. Uniforms, helmets, but Little League, the value, the virtue, the bang for the buck, no doubt. I mean, there's been times where because my son watches it all, we watch it together. Sometimes I just wake up. He's an early riser on the weekend, which sucks, but sucks for me, you know. But although he's old enough now to get his own stuff, and I to go feed him right away. But he'll just kind of go to YouTube and put on a random, you know, I don't mean from like the 70s, but like the last couple of years, a Little League World Series game. I'm like, oh, who's playing? Like in 2003, I don't know, you're watching Hawaii, whatever. He loves it. I love it. But number one, logistically, we're still playing. Well, not we. I've played for years. He's still playing. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, and I guess I'd have to make a decision, but the decision really made for us, like, by the time Williamsport is really cooking with the World Series, he's in football camp. And I don't mean, like, camp where you pay $300 a week to go for, I mean, the camp with his team to start the season. And he plays quarterback. He's not leaving. So, it sounds great. Yeah, I'm going to go to Williamsport. I'd love to. Do I think it happens unless we're playing there in a couple of years? Probably not, but man, I feel you. And it's great that you had that bond with your son that you've done. It's tremendous. New York baseball GMs has struck. We got a little deal. Was it cash? Was it Stearns? Stearns. Mets make a move here. It's an interesting one. His name is Greg Soto. You got to remember from the Phillies, obviously, if you're a big baseball fan, you know he's on the Orioles now. Lefty pitcher, all right? And he's been around a little bit, throws hard, strikes out a lot of guys, walks a lot of guys. But here's the bottom line. We don't even know what they gave up yet. This just came across, so Hoff's looking. And I guess it was also a report from Puma that said teams are calling up about Starling Marte. So things are going to start cooking here. But this is the first little domino to start spinning, and this is something that the Mets had to do. I mean, I'm not going to go nuts and say it's an A+. It's not an F. I think it's a solid move. I'd probably say about a B. I don't even think B-. I think more of a B. It's definitely got some upside because he has good stuff. And you look at the way the Mets bullpen is set up now going backwards. Obviously, Diaz, you've got Garrett, you've got Raleigh back in the mix. I would think that, Top, you tell me if I'm missing somebody, Raleigh, Garrett, Diaz. I mean, the Mets have rolled out a procession of four or five arms who were not useful. I would have to think that Greg Soto jumps right to the line in front of those guys. So, you know, you could do a little matchup thing, obviously, even though you have to face three hitters. As a lefty, I'd have to look at his splits, but probably Soto, and then the next wave would be the Raleighs, the Garretts, and then Edwin Diaz. Make sense? Am I missing anybody?
Brazaban is like off and on. That's the thing, is that the Mets are like hot and cold. Either they come in and they're lights out, or they just have a rough, rough day. So it's so inconsistent. But I think Soto fits much better than a lot of these other guys that we are. I mean, they've been on a cycle of DFAing guys.
No question.
Bringing them back, calling them up. Yeah. Well, no. But
he was a starter.
Yeah. Like Rico Garcia, Dickie Lovelady. I mean, legitimately, you go through these people that they've been recycling through the waiver wire. It's ridiculous. Uh-huh.
I like it. Again, not going nuts, but I like it. These are the moves that, you got to make. And it's a low-level move. I don't know. He's probably up after this year contractually. I don't have that in front of me yet.
He's a free agent after this year.
I figure so. Okay. Yeah, you don't give up anything for it. It's a rental. He's a lefty. Again, 44 strikeouts, 36 innings. You love that. 18 walks in 36. He is wild. Yeah, go ahead, Hoffy.
All right. Sounds like, so from Martino, I see for Wellington Aracena.
I don't know who he is.
And Cameron Foster. I got to look up to see where they fit.
They got to be low A guys. Have to be. I would think they're low A guys.
I would hope so.
Okay.
Maybe they're guys they just picked up off the waiver wire. I'm joking.
Yeah. He's been really active then, huh? They made the move and he picked up guys off the wire. All right there, Mets fans. If you want to react to that, you can. You know, let me get a shout out here. I don't usually do shout outs. This is a good friend of mine I grew up with, Pat. So, and this guy's a massive fan of the BT and Sal show. So, first of all, his name is Brian Hagan, Lieutenant, Ladder 157 in Flatbush. Awesome house. I know a few guys there. And Pat just screenshotted me from Brian's wife, her birthday message to him on Facebook. Happy birthday. Oh, isn't that so nice? Happy birthday to my everything. That's great. You're my confidant, the most incredible dad to our amazing kids, a husband I adore, and my partner in Knicks and Jets fandom. Good taste. How about this part, though? Whether we're celebrating a win, venting after a loss, or analyzing every word BT and Sal say on their latest show, I love you, blah, blah, there you go. That is a BT and Sal family. So happy birthday there, Brian Hagan, Lieutenant, doing good work out there on the job, Ladder 157 in Flatbush. Have an awesome day, man. It sounds like you got a good woman, too. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal, all the fan. Ralphie in East Islip. Ralph, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, BT.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things. You were talking about Ichiro while I was on hold there, and just I was watching something on him. I don't remember what it was the other day. And after he retired, he threw the first pitch out at one of the games, and he hit 91 on the clock.
I saw it.
And some of the things you don't remember about him is that he was a great outfielder.
Yeah.
He had an awesome arm.
Yeah.
And he could kill bases.
Yeah. I didn't forget that. No. I mean, if you watch baseball, who forgot that? Ichiro was amazing. You know, the other thing that I heard about him, and I'll let you make your next point. I remember hearing.
I wanted to call that.
No, I got you. I'm not hanging up on you. I got you. But one other thing about Ichiro. First of all, about a week or so ago, I saw video of him throwing. So he still keeps his arm loose. And it wasn't about the first pitch. He was just doing a workout. And outside of Christmas, this goes back to when he was playing. Even at later stages with the Yankees. And the only day that he would take off was Christmas. Every other day, there was a stretching and or some type of baseball activity in Ichiro. Just amazing.
He was amazing. Is whatever. I don't want to put him in.
He was an amazing player.
Yeah. So I called about Mets fans. I'm a Met fan rooting for the Yankees in July, which I don't see why you wouldn't want to do it, because the best part about it is if the Yankees lose, yeah. What difference does it make to me if they lose? Now, if they lose a game in September to the Phillies or the Brewers or some team that I'm, you know, going up against for a playoff spot, then yeah, obviously I'm going to be upset about that. But in July, root for the Yankees tonight. Who cares? They lose. You lost no skin off your
You could lose skin. No, well, first of all, yes, you got to root for the Yankees here. But the first part about like later in the season, I don't care if it's April 9th or September 27th. What's the difference? It's 162 games, you know? The Mets made the playoffs by, was it a game last year off? Right. They just got in. You know, they narrowly got in with 88 or 89 wins. So I think any time that, from a Mets fan's perspective, the Phillies or the Braves or the Dodgers or the Brewers or the Cubs, I'm just thinking about wild card, even though the Brewers lead the division, I think they still have the best record in baseball. The Padres, Giants, teams in the periphery of the playoffs, the Reds, you know, you should root for the Yankees to win. It doesn't matter what month it is. That really is immaterial to the conversation. It's about just having your adversary just pile up a lot of losses. Let me get Artie in East Hills. Artie, what's up, man?
Yes, Brandon, I'm disputing what you had to say about Suzuki and Ted Williams. If you take a look at the stats, Ted Williams missed 5 years in the service. He had 2,000 walks compared to 647 to Ichiro. Okay, he had 2,600 hits. You give him 5 years more, 2,000 walks, a WAR of 120 versus 60. I don't see how you can compare the two. I mean, Ichiro was a great ball player. I don't dispute that.
Yep.
And one of the best for his time.
Well, first of all, he didn't miss 5 years of WAR for World War II. He missed three. Number one.
He missed. You look at the years he missed in the 50s in Korea. He was in six games in 1 year and 37 in the next.
Well, he missed.
I was 52.
So hold on. You're talking about the Korean War. All right. So obviously, World War II, he missed 43, 44, 45. That I know.
Yes, he essentially missed 2 years in the Korean War. He only was in 40 some
Korean War in was it was in the early 50s. What, 52?
52 and 3?
Yeah.
52 and 3?
Yep.
Hey, listen, what did Ted Williams bat in his second to last year in the third year, the last in the majors when he was how old? 39? He had 388?
His last year or second to last?
I believe it was his third to last. He hit 388, and then he hit 326 in his second to last.
And he led the league. Well, second to last year, he hit, I think, 250-something. Yeah. But you're in the neighborhood.
Yes.
I got
yes.
you.
And, you
but
know,
listen, Artie.
Listen.
I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong for saying that Ted Williams is the great. All I'm saying is, and I presented it as such, that if it would have come over early, et cetera, et cetera, I don't need to restate what I said. You heard me. That there would have been an argument, especially younger fans who didn't see Ted, that Ichiro was the purest hitter of all time. I don't think that that's an outlandish statement, man. I just don't.
No, I wouldn't say it's outlandish. I would just say, comparatively speaking, you know, with WAR and all those other statistics that sometimes don't mean anything. But, you know, when you look at Ted's 2,000 walks and you look at the 521 home runs and you look at his WAR, I think he's got to come out ahead. But
it was fair enough. I mean,
that's our opinion.
Yeah, numbers are irrefutable. No, so I'm not going to push back on that. But, you know, one thing that is not a number, but it's also a reality of when he came up. He came up in the late 30s. Ted Williams came up. And, you know, did he play against minorities? I mean, this is just a rabbit hole. I don't even want to get. He did, eventually. Not right away. Ichiro did. So, I mean, you could parse this however you want. And it's not better than. It's just to contextualize, really, or not even. I mean, I don't have to provide context, really. It's just to reinforce how amazing Ichiro was rather than denigrating Ted Williams or Tony Gwynn or Ty Cobb or Rod Carew or Boggs or whatever.